Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, welcome. I encourage you to go back and listen to some of our guests' previous episodes. We've had some great guests over the last few years. And if you haven't subscribed, please do so and appreciate any reviews that will help others find our podcast. This week, we're going to visit our conversation with Alden Mills. Alden became a nationally ranked rower, a gold medalist at the Olympic Festival. He was the captain of the freshman and varsity teams at the U.S. Naval Academy, and he was served as a Navy SEAL, and he led his platoon through multiple missions. After his military career, he founded Perfect Fitness and led it to growth over 12,000% annual sales of $90 million. And was recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing consumer product companies in the country. He's also written books including Be Unstoppable, The 8 Essential Actions to Succeed at Anything, and Unstoppable Teams. And he serves on boards of a number of nonprofits, and he's got some great thoughts he's going to share with us today. Looking forward to today's conversation with Alden. For our audience that haven't read your books, can you give us just a little bit of an overview of your life story and your career up until this point?
Sure. I grew up in a small town in central Massachusetts on a farm. Every generation in my family had served through lots of trials and tribulations. One was overcoming asthma. I went to the Naval Academy. I rode crew there, which would be eight-oared rowing shells. And rowing took me to try out for the Olympic team. Got the invite, but then turned it down to go to SEAL team and became a Navy SEAL platoon commander. Did three tours of duty, went to business school, moved to San Francisco. Worked in tech for about a year and a half and then started a series of my own businesses. First two, spectacular failures. And then the third one became Inc. 500's fastest growing consumer products company in the country, number four overall. Have over 40 patents, written two books, and currently I'm on the speaking circuit. And I also do a lot of executive coaching.
Great. Well, I ask this of most every guest, if you're able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Alden with all that you've learned since that time, what advice would you give him?
Play for the long game. It's real easy to get caught up in, oh, I got to do this and I got to do that and all these little short-term things. Think about what really can make your heart sing. Now, that's a much harder conversation to have for somebody. It's so much easier to say it, but you will be shocked at the small differences you'll make every day if you're going after the thing that really excites you, where you find that passion and purpose. You need both of those, but play for the long game.
And I know I've listened to some of your talks and you talk about your experience being a SEAL and the training that you went through. And can you share just a summary of things that you learned during that experience?
Oh, how much time?
In 2 minutes.
No, 2 minutes. That's all. You're going to give me two minutes.
No, get more than that.
I will tell you, and I talk about this a lot in my second book, Unstoppable Teams. The first couple of chapters are dedicated to the importance of how you lead yourself. The very first thing that the Naval Academy teaches you and then SEAL Team reinforces again and again is that everybody's a leader, every single one of us. The key is, how do you lead yourself? And that consistency. And one of the first major milestones to leading yourself is leading this conversation we have in our head. Now, if we had lots of time, I'd tell you the story of this character kind of talked like this and would say, you know what my job is? It's to create a conversation in here, a conversation that's going to drive you to make a decision of what you're going to focus on. Are you going to focus on the pain of training, or are you going to focus on the pleasure that training could provide you? Now, he was the first phase instructor, right? Our lead instructor, responsible for weeding out our class. But that conversation I've gone on to generalize is two different voices that we all have in our head. The first voice is the whiner, and everybody has it. You don't have to go through SEAL training to have this conversation. It's, how do you know you can do that? Why do you think you should do that? You know how hard that's going to be? You know how long it's going to take? You don't have enough time. You're not strong enough. You're not this. You're not blah, blah, blah. Right? We all have it. All those reasons why we shouldn't try. And then the quieter voice, and it's very hard to hear at times if you're focused just on the whiner and all the reasons you can't do something, is the whisperer. And the whisperer at least talks to me like this. Get up. Try again. Keep going. You can do it. And that is your first job as a leader. Because how you decide to lead that conversation, both the voices are there, and one's way louder than the other, the whiner. But how you lead that conversation will directly impact how you help others lead that conversation. And the big premise of, you know, the first two books is, one, leading yourself, be unstoppable, and unstoppable teams is then leading others. And a team is nothing more than a reflection of its leader. So that would be the very first thing I would focus on, how you lead that conversation.
So you mentioned, I've heard you talk about that there were a whole group of you that were together as far as in training to be SEALs, and that they had put time and effort and energy into getting to that point of training. What were the characteristics of, that you saw in the people that quit? What was the difference between those that made it and those that didn't?
The biggest characteristic, I would say, and this is, by the way, I have, you wouldn't see it in advance. You'd see it after the fact when you talk to them about it and why they quit, is they created a negative hypothetical. The fact of the matter was, everybody who started training had already passed the physical fitness test up to 5 times. Everybody was physically fit enough to do it. So the differentiator became what was going on between their ears. And many of the times, people psyched themselves out during a particularly hard evolution, which typically those would happen at night, middle of the night, darkest time, coldest time, where your focus was nowhere. Unless you were really good with your focus, it would go straight to how painful that exercise was, right? But if you could just get your focus to, you know what, I'll suffer through this and let's just make it to the next sunrise, then you typically didn't get a quitter in the middle of the day. And so what would happen is people would say to themselves, oh my God, this is so hard right now. And I'm only in the first 12 hours. How can I possibly make it to 112 hours? Mm-hmm. And that's the negative hypothetical. And then from that negative hypothetical, they'd psych themselves out and say, well, if I can't do this and I can't do that, and this is going to be too hard here, oh, I quit. And, you know, at that moment, they get caught up in it. And then afterwards, they'd have a regret like, yeah, I pulled the trigger too early. I shouldn't have done that. I should have just stuck it out. And, you know, if you really think about anything in life, the only thing we can affect at this moment is this moment right now. Can't do anything about the past, and the future is yet to be developed.
So thinking back to that first time that you were tapped on the shoulder to, I don't know if it was in your military career or previous to that, but the first time that you were tapped on the shoulder to lead, what do you wish you would have known earlier?
How really bad I am at so many different things. I wish my ego had come a little bit, have been a little more clear for me because the ego is actually the total opposite. It obfuscated what things that I actually thought I was good at, but I really wasn't. And the quicker any young leader can get to the point of, hey, I'm not perfect. Matter of fact, we're all built to be flawed. We're built to work together. And there's a whole bunch of things I'm not only not good at, I am terrible at, I don't enjoy, and I want to go surround myself with those people. That would be one. And then number two, and this one can be really hard, working with different types of personalities. So quickly, we will make a judgment, a stereotype on some person from something. It might be a piece of clothing they wear, or how they look, or how they carry themselves. If we can suspend that judgment to really get deeply curious enough about that other person and find some common ground, you will find your career will slingshot forward in leadership with your ability to work with the most diverse of personalities. Because at the end of the day, all leading is relationship building. All team building is just about building relationships. And the better you can become a Jedi, a ninja, pick whatever great warrior you can think of at being the best at being able to work with all kinds of different personalities, the more success you'll find faster.
You talk about in your first book, you use the acrostic, you persist, for your points that you use in that. Is there one that you think most leaders don't focus on enough as far as that you talk about in the first book? I encourage everybody to pick up a copy of that, but anything that you see a common mistakes among executives?
Well, I should first kind of set the context for all the listeners out there. I'm a huge fan of acronyms, in particular acronyms that drive home the point of what the book or the message is trying to convey. In the case of the first acronym, U, the letter U, persist, it is an 8-letter acronym of the book Be Unstoppable, because that's the whole theme of being unstoppable, is choosing to persist. And I want you to persist. And I would really encourage leaders, and this is one thing they kind of forget. And this, now it's easy to go after understand your why or T for team up, but here's one that leaders start to lose at a very early age. And then they find themselves at 50, 55 going, oh my gosh, what's happened to my body? The E of persist, you persist, stands for exercise to execute. Now, you may say, well, it's easy for a guy like Alden Mills, a Navy SEAL, who's just telling me to go work out all the time. I really encourage you to understand that business is an athletic event. If you do not believe me, put on a heart rate monitor or your Apple Watch or Fitbit and go into a presentation where you have something on the line. Maybe it's a promotion. Maybe you're trying to close a sale. Maybe you're trying to convince a bunch of people this is the product feature set we should go after. Whatever that is, check your heart rate. Start it right before you walk in there. Finish it right after. And what you're going to find is you just did a workout. And the more you create an environment where you take care of yourself and think of your body as an athletic action platform, the better off you will be at having a strong mindset, more resilient, and more strength when you meet the struggles that every leader should, and I hope, meet during their journey.
So you moved into the business world, and everything went just smooth and no problems, no difficulties during that time?
100%. No failures whatsoever. Oh my goodness. First of all, I have failed way more than I've succeeded in life. But some of my most spectacular failures were in the business world. I mean, I raised $1.5 million from 37 friends and family, closest friends and family, only to learn $1,475,000 worth of ways not to launch a product. And it was only after two failed businesses and $25,000 left on my wife's credit cards that we launched our third business. And it was, you know, everyone else thought we were crazy. I was told, go bankrupt, go get a job. You're embarrassing yourself. And that's when we developed the Perfect Push-Up and, you know, changed the course of that little company's history. But I can't begin to stress how many different challenges we had. And by the way, those challenges, and this comes down to that filter and leading the conversation, those challenges present awesome opportunities, amazing possibilities. But you have to look at it that way. You got to look at the adversity as an advantage.
So think back the moment you mentioned you had to make a decision to persist and to move forward with that additional. And I'm sure there are times that you were questioning yourself as well as people were questioning you. What mindset did you use as far as to focus and to get back on track?
Can I take one more step?
Sure.
Metaphorically and literally in SEAL team training, you'd get to the point where I'd say, can I take one more step? I don't worry about the 20 steps in front, the 100 steps, the 1,000 steps, 10,000. Can I take one more step? That's what I'd get down to. When I was running out of everything in business, can we make it through one more day? When we climb mountains as a team now, can I take one more step to get that much closer? I don't even want to look at the summit. Just one more step. Stay in the now when the struggle gets tough. Don't allow, and I call your focus a focus funnel. I think of focus like a funnel that it funnels your energy into taking action. Don't allow the moment to turn into the mountain. And if you allow your focus to look at the mountain of work in front of you, you can very quickly get overwhelmed and find yourself in the quitter's column.
You mentioned that you had a successful product, but then 2008, 2009, right around that time was 2008 with the meltdown of the economy. And talk about a little bit about that, lessons you learned through that time and what principles did you apply to come back and come back even stronger?
Ooh, just gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Not in the best way. To help everyone understand, I started my first business in 2002. That failed. 2003 to 2005, did the second one. That failed. Started the third business, launched a little product called Perfect Push-Up. 2006 to 2008, we do nearly $100 million in sales. 2009, our bank loan gets frozen. We're thrown into workout. The bank has decided they don't want to support us anymore. By the way, my house was a cosign for the loan, along with my two other partners. My wife is pregnant with number three. We now owe a tremendous amount of taxes because we're an LLC, because we just did $66 million in sales in that year alone. I mean, we weren't skirting taxes. It was just all these things were coming at the same time.
Sure.
And we were told to go bankrupt again. This is the second time I was told to go bankrupt. And the same principle that you get through SEAL training, that you get through a rowing practice, that you get through writing a book or climbing a mountain. What can we do today? What can we do in this hour that can help us get a little bit closer to our goal?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely definitely easier said than done, but that focus, what do you see in business? And you said you coach executives in helping them kind of get perspective, but what questions do you ask to gain perspective or help others to gain perspective?
When I start a coaching assignment, the first thing I'll ask them as an interview process is, hey, tell me about your greatest failure. And if they can't think of one, that is typically a red flag for me. Mm. Well, gee, Alan, I guess I've just been really lucky. I've never, you know, I just never had any big failures. It's a red flag for two areas. One, they have failed something somewhere, but they can't remember it or don't want to even allow themselves to think that way. It's okay to have the failure and go, you know what? I really don't view it as a failure because I learned a lot about what I did and I kept moving on. Terrific. Tell me about your greatest learning experience then, right? We'll change the conversation on that. But the other thing, if someone really doesn't have some big spectacular failure, it also tells me they've never taken any great risks. And leading is risk-taking. If you wait to have so much information to make a decision, then you've already missed the opportunity. Now, you have to be careful to have too little information, but somewhere in the middle, I think Colin Powell said it great when he was like, you know, leading is somewhere when you have between 30 and 70% or 30 and 60% of the information. If you don't have that much, you're being ignorant. And if you have too much, well, you're just being micromanaging and you're not going to get the job done. You'll miss the opportunity. And one of the big things I see with executives as they get older is they become less risk loving and so risk averse that the world passes them by.
So you continue to learn and develop. You've written two books. You've got another one on the way. Are there other books that you recommend to leaders that have had an impact on you? Or
Yes, there's a bunch of them. If you're in specifically about leadership, I love Conscious Leadership. And that is a conversation really about leading from the heart versus leading from a position of fear, dividing love and fear and those elements. I really enjoy The Diamond Cutter. This is a monk's perspective on how the universe works with karma and learning to lead without expectation of return and understanding that all leadership is serving. And then from the more intense personal performance mindset approach, I love The Confident Mind.
Hmm. Yeah, those are some new ones that we haven't heard. That's great. So outside of work, to recharge.
I love climbing mountains. Every year, a couple of friends of mine, we get involved in a charity group that I'm still active in that serves the Bay Area at-risk youth. We send them to camp in the school. Just climbed one of the seven summits down in Argentina called Aconcagua. And the next one is to ski to the South Pole and climb the mountain down there called Mount Vincent.
Mm. Very cool. So what do you recommend you've got so many exercise patents that you've given, but for somebody who has 20 minutes to start their day, what I'm curious what your workout regimen is, and it's probably longer than that.
First and foremost, if that's all you have, go outside, put your phone away, walk around the block, take a look at the beauty around you, and just do what I would call a little walking meditation. Kill two birds with one stone. Leave the phone behind you and just embrace the moment while you're moving. If that's all you can do, combine meditation with some upright moving.
So if you want to spend longer, how do you recommend as far as somebody that's either starting out or getting back into a exercise regimen?
Get a trainer and start doing some. It might start off as low intensity and then moving into high intensity interval training, where you're doing the multiple modalities of your body, forward and back, side to side, rotational, upper and lower body, and multi-joint movements with low to medium weight at first, because you get the cardio while you're getting your muscle stronger.
So how would somebody learn more about you and your work?
They can find me on my website, alden-mills.com. And I post a blog every week. They're welcome to link in with me at Alden Mills. And I welcome anybody that is hungry to be unstoppable at going after their dreams.
What would you say to a new or an up and coming leader as some parting advice?
Number one, you are a leader. There's no such thing as a leadership gene. You can't screen for it. Whether someone's naturally born with it or, do you grow into it? You can always, always be a leader. You are a leader. You are a leader yourself by getting yourself up every day, listening to this show, going and learning and developing, reading. But remember this, you are a leader. Number two, you want to be an unstoppable leader? Know that it's a choice. You make the choice of what you want to become. It is up to you.
Well, Alden, this has been a lot of fun, and definitely this can be helpful to our audience, and wish you continued success in all you're doing, and look forward to talking to you again when your new book comes out.
Mark, I look forward to it. Keep inspiring people to be unstoppable.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.